I only talk to myself and listen to voices in my head when I'm not on a podcast. The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 385, recorded on May 10th, 2015.
Welcome to the 385th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and the 218th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am Paul S. Novak.
And I am Jonah Falcon.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry, and I think it's been a slow news week.
Well, the thing is that, you know, if you're wondering why we didn't record last week, we did record last week.
Oh, we totally did record last week.
We had the best podcast in a long while. There were laughter, there was tears, there was outrage, and I'm not kidding or hyperbole.
No, none of that is hyperbole either. Given the news over the last 2 weeks, there was definitely like speculation and insight. I was really proud of it, unfortunately.
I mean, Paul was calling out Reddit and Twitter and everybody else. Yeah, I'm wondering if I should just let you have the floor for a moment, like a few minutes about suicide prevention, you know, and how to be proactive against it.
Yeah, the long and the short of it was
everybody dropped the ball. That's what you're about to say.
Yeah, a young woman apparently
committed
suicide, and a young transgender woman committed suicide, and everybody involved just kind of dropped the ball on warning signs that were clearly there. I made a whole point about how it is incumbent upon corporations to be proactive and take all of these things seriously.
Not just the corporations. Remember, those 9 foot tall suicide barriers were supposed to be up last year. And
right, I mean, the young woman threw herself off the George Washington Bridge, and this is not the first time that, you know, politicians have promised us that there was going to be
in 2 weeks.
Four people have thrown themselves off this bridge in 2 weeks. Politicians all promised that we were going to get, you know, barricades to prevent people from being able to do this, and that never happened. It went from the outrageous to the absolutely hysterical, where I think I almost peed my pants at one point because I was laughing. I don't even remember what I was laughing so hard about.
Oh, well, the other thing is that we had a long discussion about comics, and we were talking about Batgirl, and we were talking about everything going on with Marvel and that sort of stuff. Yeah, it had nothing to do with video games. We just went on a 20-minute binge of comic book discussion, and it was glorious.
Well, I mean, it's tangentially related because the lines between different, especially when you're talking about popular intellectual properties, the lines between, you know, the DC television world versus the video game world versus their movie world, I mean, it's all becoming very much just, and younger people view their content in different ways.
And now we find out that Quicksilver and Scarlet, which were never mutants, as Marvel continues to cut the X-Men out of their universe, as they already cut out Fantastic Four, but we're not going to get into that because, again, this is a video game podcast, not a comic book podcast.
That was one of the points that we were making, was that, you know, it's not like they don't make video games out of these characters. They most certainly do, because, you know, because just as much as we will love our X-Men or our...
You know what? I just realized that there are no Fantastic Four video games coming out, and there are no X-Men video games coming out, but I'm willing to bet you there are Avengers games coming out. And one of the things I'd like to discuss is Paul's status on the show, and I think he would agree that the proper time for him to leave the show, because he has to leave at some point, will be at 400. I mean, might as well leave on the milestone, you know what I mean?
400? That's 2 years from now.
That's 15 episodes from now. It's not 2 years from now.
400. We're at 218.
No. Oh, 400 of the TD Gaming Podcast. That's not the video game roundtable. 400. Where did you get 218 from?
I mean, what are you talking about?
That's 15 podcasts from now, Paul. That's two and a quarter months, I think.
Yeah, it's
2.5 months.
You know, I've been doing a lot of thinking, and I've talked with Jonah about it. And while I do really love the gaming podcast, you know, I'm on the show for about you know, 5 years now, 4 years now.
Almost 200 episodes yourself, actually.
I mean, it was like what? Like Charmed, when it went on for longer without Shannon Doherty than it did with her.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just think that, you know, it might be time to make room for someone new, and it might be time for me to find another endeavor that I can devote my time to.
Well, it doesn't mean you won't do guest appearances.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I would love to maintain a relationship with being able to come back and talk to people when it's, you know, when I can offer a relevant insight.
But the thing is that, you know, I pick 400 because, you know, it's a milestone and you'd be here for that anyway.
Of course.
You might as well go out on a milestone rather than come back, you know, just come pop back in awkwardly, you know.
Right. And you know, it's something that Jonah and I have been talking about for a while. So while I will miss everybody, of all of our regular listeners.
Well, it's not like you're going to die or go to another planet.
Right. No. It's just... It's just I'll likely be around much less. And, you know, since we're looking for – it just seemed like since we're looking for new panelists anyway,
you know, that
it just seemed like the universe was trying to tell me something.
But everybody loves you on this podcast, you know, because we got another letter from somebody. And we'll do it at the end of the show when we do our listener feedback. So, you know, but the show is actively looking for a new podcast. I actually – contacted somebody, and the funniest thing is he said is that, you know, I'm mostly about Nintendo, and, you know,
just trying to replace me. I see.
No,
getting a younger model.
Actually, I think he's older. But anyways, it's sort of like I can imagine both of you being on this podcast at the same time, you know, because
and ideally I'd love to, you know, be able to meet whoever is going to be joining the show and know that I'm leaving it in good hands.
Well, the thing is that we have to, it always works better with three people anyway, but the other thing is that, you know, it's still an audition, you know,
right.
You know, the thing is I'm not looking for any listeners as podcast hosts, except for maybe one, because the thing is that we need listener feedback, and you can't do listener feedback if you're doing the podcast.
And one of the things that I consistently tried to bring to the show was, you know, a new and relevant viewpoint of being a game maker.
Yeah, but anyways, we all know who the listener would be if I elected, because he's also done other podcasts. So, anyways, Paul, what
Max Donovan?
No, actually, I haven't heard from him in a long while.
Max, if you're out there, let us know you're okay.
Oh dear, I just had some sorrowful thoughts, but we're gonna move on. What have you been playing, Paul?
Oh my god, I have been playing more Candy Crush Saga than I know what to do with.
Oh, Paul.
I would like to. I've been doing research on the entire match 3 genre, and I would like to share
research. Well, actually, Candy Crush isn't really a match 3. I mean, I guess technically it is, but basically, if you're only matching 3, you're doing really poorly because you're supposed to link.
Starting with my relevant insight.
Okay. And this folks is why
I understand what you're saying. Like, match 3 is the very basic, like, you have to match at least 3, but that is why that's what the genre is called.
Yeah.
It's like saying, well, Halo doesn't count as a first-person shooter because you have more than five, you know, one person on your team.
But, you know, while it's, you know, to me, the Candy Crush-type games are not word searches. They're, what did they call them? You know, the ones in which you had sort of like squiggly finding word searches in which it wasn't a direct angle, but it was actually you snaked around it. I forgot what they're called.
Right, but that again is still just a word search. Well, it's the same kind of semantical issue. It's still a word search. It just has the extra feature that you can go around corners.
Yeah, basically.
So in the way that Candy Crush has features in which you can connect more than three pieces at once to create various, you know, various power-ups and bonuses.
Yeah.
The original game concept, which was like, I don't know, at least 30 years old at this point, was just looking for three, and that's all the original versions had. So while the more advanced ones of the modern age, you can connect more, they're still called the match 3 genre. So
was
I've been playing the match 3 genre.
Was it Columns or Dr. Mario the first one to do it, to do the match 3?
I want to say Bejeweled.
Bejeweled. Yeah, I don't know if Bejeweled came first, though. See, that's the thing. I mean, Bejeweled became the, you know, the match three game, right? The one that every. Right. But I Columns came before Bejeweled. But was Mario Dr. Mario was a match three, wasn't it? Oh no, wait, it was.
I'm not even sure if it qualifies as a match as a match three as much as it qualifies as a Tetris derivative.
No, that's
because
right. It was
a
puzzler.
Because of the dropping.
It was like street. It was like Puzzle Fighter. Yeah, I mean Puzzle Fighter is basically Dr. Mario, but with Street Fighter characters. Anyways, back
to
your
research.
So
I've been doing a lot of research on the match three genre, and oh my god, if somebody wanted to do nothing but play match three games, there are so many free ones out there that you could play them literally straight without needing to purchase a life or stop. You just move on to another one. You go from Candy Crush.
Okay, I'm getting a message that the connection between us is slew.
That's a Book of Life.
I have to pause it. Go ahead, Paul. It's telling me that the connection is now slow between us.
But, I mean, there's so many, because of the success of Candy Crush, I think, and Bejeweled, and, you know, there's so many free Match 3 games out there of different varying qualities that really you could, if you wanted to do nothing, if that was your genre, you could play nothing else but a Match 3 game forever, like infinitely. You just keep going.
I don't know if I could do that. I could never play Zen Bejeweled that long.
Right, but that's the thing. Like, all of these things have features in which, you know, you play for five lives or however many, and then, you know, they tell you to stop or spend money to buy more lives. You never have to spend money to buy more lives because you could just move on to another match three game. That's the big insight.
Okay. So, yeah, I mean, have you been playing anything else other than that?
I just told you that I've been playing nothing but match three games.
No Dungeon Keeper? No.
Well, no, I mean, aside from my standards.
Okay, there you go. Okay.
There are some games that I will always find a little extra time for. You know, my heyday neighborhood competitions, my, my Dungeon Keeper. But, I mean, usually I try to answer the what have you been playing with what have I added to my game playing cycle every day.
Hmm. Okay.
How about you, Jonah? What have you been playing?
I've been playing State of Decay on the Xbox One. And last week I was talking about some of my frustrations, and this week I just exploded. I mean, I had the last straw. I mean, you know, I don't know if your characters are supposed to die, you know, all the time, but I'm going to tell you something. You know, it's extremely frustrating, and there's just a lot of things that happen that just seem very unfair. Like, it just made me want to punch the screen, you know? I just could not stand it. It's a digital game, so it's just going to probably wipe it from my hard drive at some point. I mean, it just, you know, I mean, here's the thing. I only play the games, like, an hour at a time. You know, I'm not a kid. I don't play 6 hours, 7 hours, 8 hours at a time. Because I get the distinct impression you're supposed to spend a lot of time fortifying stuff, way more than you're supposed to. And I just don't have the time for that kind of Tamagotchi. You know, it's like, sort of like your Tamagotchi dies if you don't feed it in 24 hours, you know? Some of us...
I think that not for nothing, you are not the only person who feels that way, clearly. And the free-to-play market is changing because people are getting burnt out on exactly that level of commitment. Back in 2008, 2009, when Facebook gaming became popular, people would go absolutely insane because if they didn't get back to their Farmville crops before, you know, right when the timer went out, that their crops would die and they would have to start over. People got burnt out, and now that's not the model anymore. Now, like with Heyday, arguably the most popular currently in the crafting genre, if you don't come back for a week, your crops will still be there. You just didn't get to maximize the fact that you could have been planting more crops all this time.
I mean, well, I'll get, you know, there have games that'll give me notifications. Like if I'm playing Tiny Towers, I haven't played that in a while. Not because I don't like it, just because, you know, I haven't played it in a while. But if I'm doing Tiny Towers, it'll get me a notification saying, "Hey, guess what? This your shipments have arrived," or something like that. But it's not going to penalize me for you know, if I wait 4 hours before I deal with it, you know.
Right. There was a time period in which the players would accept penalization for missing their game appointment, and now that's no longer the case. Players aren't willing to be punished that way anymore, and the marketplace is bearing that out. So people have been doing, like I've said all along, they're voting with their pocketbooks. They're realizing, why would I pay money for something that makes me feel bad when I can't make it my top priority in life? And they've moved on. And fortunately, the more successful gaming companies have responded.
Yeah.
And that is probably what makes them more successful.
So that's my horror story. I'm really looking forward to Batman Arkham Knight. I mean, we discussed it briefly last week, but I think that's the game that I'm really looking forward to. Someone told me that they're really looking forward to The Witcher 3, which is coming out in like next week. I'm burned out on the third person RPGs. I think all I can take right now is Mass
really?
Effect, and that's it. Yeah.
Huh? That doesn't sound like you.
Hey, I burned out on shooters when I was in my 20s. I couldn't stand it anymore.
Well, yeah, I mean, your reflexes also got slower.
No, I mean, I love them now because the thing, I'm starting to appreciate that versus something like Skyrim, which is just so slow. And that kind of game I've really burned out on. I am not doing any more open world games. And by the way, State of Decay is an open world game, but at least it's not a huge, huge, huge open world game. You know, but the huge
open
world games,
intimidating.
The huge open world games, you know, like Skyrim, pass. Saints Row, pass. Grand Theft Auto, pass. I just don't have the energy for that anymore, you know?
Right, and the novelty is worn off. You've been there and done that, so you want to move on to the next thing.
Yes, so not so much the novelty as the, you know, I think it's just the
tedium.
But
that helps. That helps you from feeling like something is tedious.
It is tedious, though. I mean, they're gonna have to revise that model, and whoever revised that model to people's satisfaction, it's gonna be the next big hit. You know, because I'm gonna tell you something: Dragon Age Inquisition, that was not it. And the fact
okay,
is,
okay, but I have a feeling that there's something coming up in the news that I want to see if we get to.
Yeah, but before we do that, I just want to say, you know, the fact that they started that game's life as a MMO multiplayer thing, that killed the game from the start. It was already on a bad seed, and you know, everything from there just changed and just made it. And the story I was really invested in, but you know, it is one of the rare cases in which the story, no matter how great it is, it can't save me from the gameplay. And I know what you're about to say, because you say it about a billion times. Go ahead, say it. We know you want to.
But with your wallet?
No. Something is...
I blame the parents?
Gameplay... A story is...
Oh, story is gameplay's bitch.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm going to say it, because if I don't say it in a drastic way, people won't remember it, and I think it's that important. No, but I think it's that important. People... I have a game designer friend, and I was just talking about this at brunch. I have a game designer friend who has come up with a fantastic game, and the one critique that I would give him is that whenever he speaks about his game, he gets really excited about it, so much so that he starts telling me all about the story and doesn't tell listeners what are they going to do when they're, you know, what is their main activity in the game. Huh. It's like, oh, well, there's this army and there's this conflict. And it's like, yeah, okay, but what role am I playing? Am I a soldier or am I a general? Am I the supply sergeant? Am I the chaplain? Huh. You know? It's like, yeah, but I mean, you know, they're progress versus preservation, and it's got all these great themes. And it's like, yes, but why? What am I bringing to this experience? So, I mean, yeah, story is gameplay's bitch.
All right. So, we're going to move on to game news. I'll go first. Portal, Doctor Who, The Simpsons, and more confirmed for LEGO Dimensions. And this comes first from Polygon. LEGO Dimensions, Warner Interactive Entertainment's crossover Toys to Life video game, and I guess that's the official name of
the
genre now?
That is the official name of this category, and dude, I called it that from day one.
Okay. We'll get add-on packs that are based on The Simpsons, Doctor Who, Jurassic World, Scooby-Doo, and Valve's Portal 2, according to files posted by LEGO. As spotted by Brickset, building instructions PDF published by LEGO for an upcoming LEGO Dimensions set based on the Back to the Future shows images of fun packs, team packs, and level packs for the above properties. Those characters were leaked via online retailers earlier this month. A level pack based on The Simpsons includes Homer, The Simpsons family car, and their television set. Additional The Simpsons fun packs will include Bart and Krusty the Clown, each with their own vehicle. Doctor Who will get a level pack featuring the 12th Doctor, a TARDIS, and K-9, while the level pack, the Portal 2 level pack, will feature Chell, a turret, and a companion cube. Ooh, a companion cube. The Jurassic World team pack will include Chris Pratt's character, a velociraptor, and a security guard, while the Scooby-Doo team will feature Shaggy, Scooby, the Mystery Machine van, and a very large sandwich. What? No Scooby snacks? Is that too much like a drug for them? You know?
I don't know, but I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if in the modern day and age, Popeye wasn't allowed spinach anymore because it's a steroid metaphor.
LEGO's building instructions also show off characters from some previously confirmed properties, which include the LEGO Movie, The Wizard of Oz, Ninjago, The Lord of the Rings, and superheroes from the DC Universe. So...
okay, I'm just going to give it a second to let the Everything is Awesome song get out of my head. Okay, we've done
Everything
that.
Everything is awesome.
Oh my god, I'm so excited, and I want to point out that for weeks we have been seeing, like, theoretical what would you make concepts for new Lego sets. And you know, we've seen The Simpsons and then they made one and now it's in the game. We've seen Doctor Who and then they said we're gonna make it, you know, we're gonna make it a Lego set and now it's gonna be in the game.
Right now flashing in front of you are images of the sets themselves, so you can see them, you know, and these are leaked, you know, so these look... This doesn't look like someone's gonna do with a Photoshop or something like this. This actually looks like actual, you know, advertising.
Right. And the point is, I'm wondering if, you know, what else have we seen lately in this whole we're just letting our fans, you know, our Lego fans be creative and just listening to them and posting their pictures online. I'm wondering how many other of these sets that have just been quote unquote fan conceptions or fan send-ups that we're going to end up seeing soon as real sets and then now into the DC game. Is the Golden Girls coming out for Lego soon? I mean, that was one of the pictures that I saw recently.
I know that you're probably geeked over Doctor Who. I mean,
I'm very geeked over Doctor Who.
So the question is, who else
I'm
from
not
Doctor
be
Who?
Happy unless Rose is there.
I was about to say, are you going to wait for Rose?
We
the
all
13th
know that
Doctor.
Rose is the best.
13th Doctor, oh, what's his name again? Dr. Jack Harkness?
Oh, Captain Jack.
Yeah.
Who do I want more, David Tennant or... I know I don't want Chris Eccleston. He can go.
Well, who's the 12th
Doctor
again?
Obscurity.
Who's the 12th Doctor?
I forget which one. I forget his name.
Okay, we'll quickly look it up. But, you know, so here's the problem is Peter Capaldi. Peter Capaldi. And what's interesting is that I know Peter Capaldi best for being Olsen from Local Hero. You know?
Yeah, see, I don't care about Peter Capaldi. I haven't had the time to care about him. And again, only because I've had no exposure. Like, I haven't seen him in any Doctor episodes. I haven't, you know, but I've already been on David Tennant and Matt Smith's run on the show. So that's, you know, so that was what would make me excited, would be hearing that there's... like a crossover, or that we're going to go back and tell one of those chapters.
They definitely,
you know,
have more than one Doctor.
It would be stupid of them not to.
And what's going
to
be funny is that the way the Lego characters change, it's just going to be very natural. Hey, look, you're going from the 11th Doctor to 12th Doctor. what's so unusual about that? You know.
Well, again, it also doesn't have to be a continuous story. You know, it's just another way to access, like we were saying before, it's just another way to access the same characters. So we can tell a story with the 12th Doctor set, you know, next year, or we can tell a story set in 2009 with Christopher Eccleston's Doctor.
Here's a question.
If we want to do that.
I mean, and I'm wondering if you're going to have the same sort of cross-genre interaction that you do with Infinity and also Skylanders, in which, you know, you have Homer meeting the Doctor or Marty McFly meeting Scooby-Doo and that sort of stuff.
I think that's part of the appeal of the genre, because quite frankly, you know, Skylanders went ahead and okay, so Skylanders is first in the category. They had the luxury benefit of being first and being boutique and having their own unique brand of IP development. And so they went and created their whole own Pokemon type universe.
Also,
now the problem is that with the addition of heavy hitters like Disney as the second, and now
Warner Brothers.
DC Warner Brothers, now it's kind of like you have to be Mattel or Hasbro or somebody who's bringing in massive amount of IP characters.
The thing is that, you know, Warner Brothers is a little bit more free than Disney is, because Warner Brothers can get away with, say, getting Portal 2 in there, you know, or Doctor Who. You know, Disney is going to remain with their own IPs. You know, they're not going to. They're not going to.
In some ways, Disney does become a slave to its own brand.
Yeah, I mean, yes, they have Star Wars. Yes, they have Marvel. You know, and yes, they have their movies.
But those are official Disney brands.
Yeah,
They wouldn't have made the purchases of those characters if they didn't fit with this pre-existing core values of Disney.
But on the other hand,
whereas the core values of the Simpsons property is being irreverent, being on the nose, being political at times.
Well, wait.
None of those things are what Disney is.
Well, wait a minute. Do they not have Cusco in the Disney Infinity?
No, Cusco's not in Disney Infinity.
Oh, because, you know, if you want irreverent, then you can go with Cusco, Pacha, and Yzma if you want.
Right, but I mean, but Cusco has since reformed.
But here's the thing: is that you can do it at any stage.
He's grown. He's grown.
Yeah,
not
from
sure.
17 to 18. Come on. Here's the thing: is that and by the way, I watched it 2 days ago. You know, and I think it's that and Ratatouille are the Disney movies that I can watch anytime. So, here's the thing: is that on the other hand, Disney can always create their own characters by releasing an animated film with new characters, and they'll always, you know, and they'll always, what's it called? And they'll automatically have, you know, I don't know the last time Disney had a bomb. I think it may have been Robin Hood. And even, you know, that has grown over time. I mean, they have the 40th anniversary DVD or Blu-ray right now for Robin Hood. The Black Cauldron. The Black Cauldron was their first real bomb. If I remember correctly.
And I wouldn't even go so far as to call the Black Cauldron a bomb. It was just very different. And it wasn't what people were expecting. Had they taken that opportunity to make like a Disney tween imprint, like in the same way that they have Touchstone to be able to capitalize on plots that won't fit necessarily with the main Disney brand.
But you know, the best thing about the Lego, what do you call it? Toys? You can't call them a toy, can you?
Toy figures. Life. I would always say the
no,
toys.
I mean, no, the
figures.
Figures themselves, right?
The figures, yeah, I would say figures.
The thing is that they'll be Lego characters, you know?
Yeah, they'll fit with your other Lego blocks.
Yeah, I mean, that's really cool to me. That they'll be, the sandwich is huge. It's a Dagwood sandwich for Scooby-Doo.
I agree, and I just get more and more excited by the Toys to Life category every time I hear something about it.
So,
I think it's going to be bigger than Rock Band, frankly.
But here's the thing.
Like the whole rhythm genre.
Here's the thing for the consumer, though. Can these games coexist? Can you say, oh, you know what, I'm going to get Lego Dimensions. Am I going to still buy stuff for Infinity 3.0? That's the question, because now you're adding...
It all becomes... At this point, it's becoming a race to which fandom are you going to support. Are you going to be, you know, a Disney? Are you going to be a DC? Are you going to be a Marvel? Are you going to be a Warner Brothers? Are you going to be a Doctor Who? Are you going to be a Simpsons?
Yeah, the thing is, you know, the funny thing is that people who are devoted to Skylanders are still devoted to Skylanders, and they're still buying
absolutely,
up those.
Absolutely, because they're their own. I mean, they're their own brand, so they get their own brand of humor, their own messaging. I mean, it's a really interesting time.
So
it's a
basically,
really interesting category.
You're just gonna look at the IPs and say, which one am I really into? And you know what? The gameplay is taking sort of a backseat to the characters now.
All other things being equal, which is, I was trying to make that point. All other things being equal, because as I've said before, story is gameplay's bitch. If this Lego thing comes out and it's twitchy and it's buggy and there's not enough things to do in it, it'll fizzle real fast.
Fortunately,
it doesn't matter that you could be Homer if all you can do is sit on the couch and watch TV.
The developers Traveler's Tales, and they have a lot of experience with the Lego games, and they know how to make people have enough activity. Yeah, Traveler's Tales is doing it. So, you know, they know...
Which is why we're encouraged.
Yeah, which they know how to make... Because, here, look. The first Lego game was Lego Star Wars 1, remember? And there was this question of how you were going to be able to have, you know, second playthrough and third playthroughs. They found a way, you know? And they know how to make stretch-thin material so that it's full and you get a lot of entertainment value and it's deep. So I'm pretty sure that they've been working on this for at least 2 years. And they figure something out. Now, the thing is that me, I'm not going to be a day one purchaser. However, if the reviews are good, you know, I might actually jump into the Toys to Life genre with Lego Dimensions. You know.
Yeah, see, here's the thing. I'm so invested in Infinity, I don't know that I can switch now. I don't know that I could make such a large investment on another...
Remember how it was like 20, 25 years ago? You know, you owned...
You were a Nintendo or a Sega. That was it.
And if you wanted to play Sega, you went over to your friend's house.
Right. And I think we might be seeing the same kind of thing. Which, by the way, speaks very well to our economic recovery.
Yeah. So, you know... So if I ever move to LA, I'll be the kid who owns Lego Dimensions. You'll be the kid who owns the Infinity.
Okay, we got a hard stop coming up.
Okay, moving on to the next item.
Report, Xbox One 60 frames per second game DVR capture goes live, and this comes to us from GameSpot. Xbox One Preview Program members can now reportedly capture gameplay footage at 60 frames per second, a major improvement over the game DVR's previous 30 frames per second limitation that has been in place since launch. New videos posted on Xbox Live via Reddit seem to reveal the improved frame rate support. The 60 frame rate per second gameplay capture functionality appears to be available only for Xbox One Preview Program members at the moment. Typically, Microsoft uses the Preview Program to test new features before they are released publicly. We've followed up with Microsoft asking for more information. Access to Xbox One...
Ignore that part. That shouldn't be there.
Microsoft has not yet announced the new features coming to Xbox One through its expected May update. It now certainly sounds like 60 frames per second game DVR support is going to be included. TV DVR is another reported feature that has not yet been announced by Microsoft.
Yeah, that I'm really looking forward to TV DVR because I don't have TiVo, I don't have, you know, a DirecTV or anything like that. And TV DVR would be really, really nice to have on my Xbox One. The thing about the 60 frames per second is that, you know, when I do the Twitch, my connection is slow, so I get really blocky, bad video. So if I want to this might be an easier way to DVR it and then upload it, use their upload thing and then get it from there, rather than having to do it through Twitch, you know. And this is just staying with the whole, you know, Microsoft is the entertainment, you know, wants to make this console the entertainment center of your room. The only problem I have is that lately my Xbox One has mostly been used for TV, YouTube, and Netflix more than gaming.
Yeah, I think it's kind of interesting if you're... And you know what? For a very small percentage of the gaming population, I think it's going to be very interesting. I think that it's not going to be a make-or-break decision-maker. Because quite frankly, it's kind of like that one friend that everybody has who's really into his audio equipment and can sit there and talk to you for hours.
Are you
about
calling
the difference
people AV geeks now?
No, I'm not calling people AV geeks, but for those who are really passionate about video capturing their games, just in the same way that people are really passionate about their car's sound system and like they want to use only the gold-plated wire or whatever because it makes this microscopically perceptible change in their music. Great. Fantastic. Human eye can't perceive more than 24 frames per second anyway. That's why the film industry has been doing it this way for decades.
Well, 60 frames per second is not more about the eye, but more about the reaction, the controller, you know, because the people don't seem to understand this, that, you know, the controller has to send the signal to the console, and the console has to send the signal back to the controller, and so on and so forth. And when you have 60 frames per second, it's smoother because it's able to react faster, you know. And also, it's you know, video games are an entire other beast, really. But I'm more excited about the TV DVR. Now, we're going to move on to this next item, and I'd love to see your reaction to this. And stop clicking whatever you're clicking, because I can hear it.
Well, I'm clicking back to the show notes.
Nintendo partners with Universal Parks to create themed rides and attractions. And this comes to us from Tech Times. Nintendo has finally taken the plunge and collaborated with Universal Parks and Resorts to create character-based attractions and rides based on its popular franchises, which may include Mario Brothers and The Legend of Zelda. Soon, Nintendo fans will be able to hobnob with popular video game characters such as Mario or even explore dungeons along with Link as he attempts to rescue Princess Zelda. On Thursday, May 7th, which was 3 days ago, the two companies announced their partnership, which aims to bring the magical world of Nintendo to life and Universal's popular theme parks. Quote, now, for the first time, those stories and characters will be brought to life in entirely new ways, revealed the two companies in a joint statement. The partnership will help Nintendo extend its reach and expand the popularity of its IP and characters, just like Disney. Universal Parks and Resorts is owned by NBC Universal. It has several theme parks all over the world, namely Orlando and Hollywood in the U.S., Osaka in Japan, and Singapore. Universal also has plans to create theme parks in Beijing and Moscow. According to the collaboration, Nintendo's popular video game characters will only be featured in resorts and theme parks belonging to Universal. However, what exact terms of the deal are not known at this juncture. Which theme park will get the Nintendo character-based attractions first is also not clear. Moreover, it's not known which characters Universal will be focusing on. Nintendo, too, is keeping mum and simply letting on that it will feature, quote, Nintendo's most famous characters and games. Nintendo and Universal Park and Resorts are anticipated to divulge additional details in the coming month at the Universal Studios popular theme park in Osaka, which is Nintendo's home country. So the only thing I'm thinking of is what took them so long? I mean...
Okay, well, who cares? Because now that it's here, we can finally get down to some really interesting speculation.
Okay.
They've done it, they pulled the trigger. Now, the first problem that they're going to have is which park are they going to do first?
Osaka, I'm pretty sure. I mean, it's...
Right. Are they going to do... And I don't know, though. I don't know which one is going... Which one gives them the largest amount of space... The largest amount of visitors per year.
I know you're thinking about
highest profile launch.
I know you're thinking about Universal Studios in North Hollywood.
Universal Studios, because I live within view of the Universal Studios here in Hollywood.
Actually, it's North Hollywood.
They're just now building that Harry Potter Hogwarts castle that was in Orlando 5 years ago.
Well, here's the thing that leads me to believe they might not be doing the Nintendo there since they're starting the Harry Potter. You know,
I mean, I'm just looking, like, I'm looking right now at the scaffolding around the
tower. Let me ask you a question. So, which would you prefer, Harry Potter or Nintendo?
I love them both, so I can't really draw a party line there. There's room for both of them in my life, and I'm sure for everybody else's life, too.
But there's a room at Universal Studios is the question. See, that's...
The problem here is, for anybody who's visited Universal Theme Park, look at their relationship with The Simpsons and how much of a park presence The Simpsons has in a universe. They have one ride. They have a couple. They have character meet and greets, and they have a little bit of scenery.
What about Jurassic Park? I mean, is it just the one flume and that's it?
Yeah, Jurassic Park. It's the one flume. It's a quick service, counter service restaurant and a photo booth. It's like, guys, like, so I'm really, really skeptical. But on the other hand, now, if you look at the partnership with Harry Potter, I mean, they went all out. First they gave it a massive area in the way that, like, a land of Disneyland would give a massive area to one concept. And then they doubled it by putting it in their second gate as well.
Well, here's
if
the thing.
If they could do something like that around the world, it might be interesting.
Could it just be the timing? I mean, you know, when they did The Simpsons and Jurassic Park, they weren't going to go hog wild because it was all relatively new for them, you know. And now they're starting to understand that if you're going to do it, you better put everything into it. You know?
And you know what? It might have been Joe Rowling that brought that insight to their company. It might have been, look, if you're going to make a, you know, she might have taught them that. If you're going to use my fantastically independently successful IP, you're going to need to give it, you know, however many acres of land to support this experience properly and not just one attraction. Like, I mean, the Simpsons attraction is great, but it's just one ride and it's a repurposed ride at that.
I have this vision when it does come to either, you know, Hollywood or Orlando, they're going to have a 3D ride, a 3D movie ride, like they did with Back to the Future, you know.
And call it a day. I mean, for all we know.
Not call it a day, but just start with that, you know.
I mean, and that's the thing. For all we know, they might just be repurposing the Simpsons ride. And I think, the game community would be outraged. You've touched on, for anyone who knows me, you've touched on my other big passion, which is amusement parks in general. So while Nintendo might want the flagship unveiling to be in Japan, does Japan really offer the same amount of space opportunities that Orlando has?
Or is it
like, they bought up a whole bunch of swampland.
They might have just made it more, it might be the easier thing to do right now, you know?
Right, I mean, it might be easier to
get might be able to devote more space to it as well.
Or, I mean, are they going to double down and do, and split the globe in half and do Orlando and Japan all at once? Because how many Americans are going to fly to Japan to go to the, see the, not Nintendo lands, not Nintendo theme park, the Nintendo attractions?
You know, this is just funny because this is the first time I've seen you be this enthusiastic about two stories in one podcast.
Oh my God. You talk about offering my unique insight. So yeah, like it's really interesting and it's really, I'm really scared at the same time, you know, because it could be so easy to mess it up. If they,
you know what they might do?
Look it up online. Simpsons Land at Universal is not a land.
You know what? Actually,
the world of
they might do.
No, brilliance. Oh my God, I think I just got it. Okay, go say your thing before you forget it.
Okay, well the thing is, I'm thinking it could be that they'll make it into a kiddie park. You know, because you have these, you know, like in Coney Island, you had the kiddie parks, you know, which are aimed at 10 and under or 8 and under, you know, that the Nintendo property would really fit well with that, you know.
Oh my God, I would be so frightened. I would be so frightened if they did that. I really would pray. I mean, because that's example two of how you would fuck that concept up.
I don't think so.
Because as far as people, okay, the people who have the money to introduce that to, you know, especially if you're going to fly to Japan, people who have the money to be that loyal to these 25-year-old IPs of Mario and Zelda, because let's face it,
does Nintendo own the Pokemon license? I don't think so, do they?
Nintendo does own Pokemon.
Oh, okay. Because that would be a kiddie park thing.
So that's the thing, though. You have to make it size. I mean, if Disney has taught us anything about theme parks, is that you have to make all the attractions sized so that the adults can get on the ride with the kids.
Okay. Make your quick point, because we got to move on to the next item.
Oh, my God. Universal is going to lose the Marvel theme park rights in 2 or 3 years. What if they're going to strip Island of Adventure at Universal from Marvel? They're going to strip all the Marvel stuff out of that entire island and redo it as Nintendo Island.
Well, there you go. I mean,
oh my God, that's
and
brilliant.
Remember,
they should do that.
Remember Nintendo a couple of E3s back? You know, they had when they were launching the Wii U, they had their Nintendo Island already. Remember? They had mini games.
Okay, that's my prediction.
Okay,
that's my prediction. if they're smart, they'll do it there because they have all that land that they need to change over soon anyway.
Right. So we're gonna move on to the next item. Microsoft. Oh, this is you actually.
Microsoft teases big E3, big rare reveal at E3, and this comes to us from Forbes. Ooh, a reputable news source. Microsoft has promised us a big year for Rare, the one stellar developer best known for some of the biggest hits on the N64, from GoldenEye to Banjo and Kazooie. But since their acquisition by Microsoft, many team members have left and their output has slowed. Their latest project was Kinect Sports Rivals, a title whose success you may have guessed given at the Kinect in its title. Now Microsoft is confirming that Rare has something big to share with us at E3 this year, a new game. It's possible they're working on more than one, but signs are pointing to one big reveal. It would likely be an Xbox One exclusive, and it isn't going to be Kinect Sports Reveals 2.
Rivals 2, but anyway.
Right now, there are two schools of thought about which of Rare's old IPs would be resurrected as a next-gen game. Or a new-gen game, as you know, you're right, the copy's right. A new-gen game. Odds are it's either going to be a new Battletoads game or a full-on Banjo and Kazooie sequel, Banjo 3.
3E.
Banjo-E 3E? Oh, okay. Battletoads has been hinted at for a while now. Phil Spencer was famously seen wearing a Battletoads shirt during Windows 10 preview, and according to at least one developer, Microsoft has been deemed the Battletoads IP as, quote, off the table, with more freedom allowed for other titles. Oh, for third-party developers, I would imagine. In the other corner, there's a new Banjo game which fans think could be coming instead. Banjo-Kazooie assets were recently used in a tech demo, and Phil Spencer went out of his way to suggest Banjo-Kazooie make it to the Wii U's Super Smash Bros. As playable character duo. And you can hunt through a number of interviews this year with Microsoft, Rare, and X-Rare employees, and you'll find more than a few Banjo and Kazooie hints. A new Banjo-Kazooie game would come at a very interesting time indeed. This is just this past weekend, the X-Rare employees now working at Playtonix Games launched a Kickstarter for their new game, Yooka-Laylee. It's exactly the concept of Banjo-Kazooie, a platformer in which two cartoon animals work together in tandem, and is being pitched as a, quote, spiritual successor to the game since Playtonix doesn't have the Banjo-Kazooie IP. The Kickstarter was funded within 40 minutes. Okay, so spiritual successors, I can kind of get behind sometimes. I mean, the original BioShock exactly did uphold the spiritual succession of System Shock.
See, the thing is that if Microsoft is going to do a Banjo-Kazooie game, and you have a Banjo-Kazooie clone coming out at the same time, that's kind of awkward. Although, you know what I would love to see is Microsoft tell these guys, hey, look, if you want to have a cameo of Banjo-Kazooie in your game, go right ahead and do it. You know,
right, and just make it a very not on screen for more than 3 seconds.
Yeah, make it like sort of like a friendly thing, because you know there's room for two what's called Mario 64 type games. You know, Super Mario.
Right.
Battletoads. Oh God. I mean, it has a reputation for being tougher than tough than tough. You know, just being a skin peelingly difficult game, and I wonder if they would actually make the new Battletoads that difficult if they do.
No, they won't. They clearly would not.
Yeah. But which would you think that Microsoft go through with, Battletoads or Banjo 3E?
I would go with Battletoads. Yeah. I think that Battletoads is a little bit more appealing to the 13 to 19-year-old gamer.
You know what? I'm going
to
tell you something. 21-year-old
gamer?
A lot of people love Banjo-Kazooie nuts and bolts and wish they would make it an MMO just so that people could interact like that.
I don't know. It's a tough call, but my money would be on Battletoads. Again, because if you're gonna go that far back in time to revive an IP, you probably wouldn't want something that has been at all on the palette recently.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, they had a big hit with Killer Instinct, so you know, they might want to mine the IPs that Rare has. You know the old saying, you know, use it or lose it.
Right.
It might as well make the attempt.
But moving on, I mean, the bigger news here is that it's fantastic that large reveals are starting to come back to E3.
Yeah. So
another sign of our improving economy.
Yeah. So anyways, we're going to move on to listener feedback. Go ahead, Paul.
From Scotty D, I was so looking forward to the new Silent Hill game. I'm a little upset, but I guess this is how the industry is. It's just unfortunate that it's the gamers who tend to suffer when this type of stuff happens. But as Paul likes to say, if you're not happy with the way developers do things, stop supporting them. As a thank you, I love being quoted. I should get t-shirts made. As for the discussion about older games, I sometimes use virtual machines in order to run older PC games, but I have had a really hard time finding good ways to play my old console games short of reconnecting my old systems. I would love to see more support for emulators created and supported by portable console systems like the PS Vita and Nintendo 3DS that allows for downloading and playing of old titles in ROM format. I have a PS Vita, and I only bought it so I could play PS1, I loved Chrono Trigger, and PS2 games. As for old games, I still play Dragon Warrior, Final Fantasy 3, Zelda, Chrono Trigger. I couldn't tell you which one is older. A good episode, short and sweet.
Ooh, you know,
yeah, I like short and sweet episodes.
By the way, I found my Nintendo DS, and I hadn't even touched it for at least 5 years, and I put on the power, it just powered up. You know?
Yep.
Like those things are sturdy.
Quality Nintendo product every time. My original NES works. My original copy of Zelda still works. The thing's like 30 years
old. I just mean the battery just lasted that. The thing is that I looked at the Nintendo 2DS, and it's only $129, and I'm starting to think, you know, if I get that when I go to E3, I'm going to get a lot of street passes, won't I? So.
Disney's Magical World. If you have a 3DS or a 2DS, Disney's Magical World. That game is amazing.
Okay, next letter from Jekosis. Hello, guys. I'm sorry I did not comment your great podcast so frequently. I am moving to another city right now, and my new job takes me a lot of time. The important thing, get well soon, Jonah. You sound terrible during the last podcast, even though one of them was only a few seconds. Yeah. Well, I'm not completely over my laryngitis, because that thing, you know, laryngitis just hangs on for a long time. You know? You're about to say something, Paul?
No, move on.
I heard the last four or five episodes during the past few days, and here are my questions to some questions of the week. Okay, here we go. Snack during gaming. Salt sticks because no fat or chocolate on the fingers. That's true.
Ooh, good call.
You know. Future of old games. I am into retro games, so I believe in the future of old games and consoles. All the games that came out during the last decade will fade very soon, or the 200 follow-up will come out and no one will knows the original. But like you mentioned in, during the last few episodes, there are still Atari 2600 games and NES games that people still want to play. I will stick with my old retro consoles. My newest console is an Xbox 360, and that is only because of Street Fighter 4. I am addicted to the Street Fighter series. Old game I still enjoy to play. Nearly all the NES titles, but especially Zelda, Metroid, and Mega Man. These games do not get old. Regarding the topic of Kickstarter projects, I also pledged some projects, but most of the time they were connected to some Back to the Future 2 stuff. I'm addicted to this trilogy as well. By the way, the Back to the Future documentary, it was funded like a couple of years ago, and now I finally got a message from them saying, hey, guess what? We're sending out the DVD soon, so it's like a big surprise. Since I only got Apple PCs, I am not into PC gaming, and I don't have a good opinion whether it's good or not to pledge for a game. I can hear that in the background, Paul.
Oh, sorry.
And to the topic of getting Windows 10 for free, like I said, I don't have a Windows PC and I don't want any. For the same reason, Paul sticks with XP. My Apple PCs do their work, no blue screen, no problem. So why should I get a newer, different OS when I'm happy with my one? Oh, yeah, well, I've seen the little sick Mac icon. So don't tell me you don't have a blue screen, but you have that annoying thing. I hope I wrote everything down I wanted to say. At least Paul asked for some love. Okay, here it is. And he gives you a little heart.
Mm.
I also try to give.
Aww, I got a little heart.
I also try to give him my Disney Blu-ray codes when he asked for them on Facebook. But German codes.
Yeah, absolutely did. But German codes don't work in the US Disney Rewards store.
Yeah. I hope to hear from you guys next week and the week after and the week after and the week after. Greetings from Germany, Ralph. And that's with an F.
See, now it's people like Ralph who make the show worthwhile. Because, you know, they try. They reach out. They try to follow us on Facebook and Twitter and all that kind of stuff.
And then he gave you a little heart.
And I get a little heart.
So look.
Yay, look. Now I can complete my containers.
Look for our show notes at GamingPodcast.net, along with the industry news and our gaming history articles. We enjoy your feedback, so leave us comments at our blog at GamingPodcast.net. Also, hit us up at Facebook.com/GamingPodcast or send your comments to fans@GamingPodcast.net. Subscribe to us on iTunes and leave us some iTunes comments, and you can follow me at Jonah Falcon, and Paul at StagerMonkey.
So, both of those are on Twitter.
Those are on Twitter, yes. So anyways, this wasn't quite as good as last week's, but it's still a pretty good show.
We had some better news to work with. I'm a little disappointed we didn't talk about the Disney Infinity 3.0 announcement, but I guess we can talk about that.
Yeah, I mean, well, basically, Star Wars.
I mean, it's
Wars.
Not earth-shattering news, which is probably why we didn't include it.
Well,
but.
I'd have to include it. See, it's mostly the YouTube video that they released for that.
Yeah, you know? But hopefully there'll be an additional bit of story that we can comment on it next
week. You know what? We got Lego Dimensions, so there's that.
We got Lego Dimensions, yeah. So, I mean, just wait for my feedback on Disney Infinity 3.0. Just come back and see us next time.
Okay, so we will talk. What am I saying? So we'll see you next week.
Bye, Bonds. What? It's good advice.
Okay. So don't do that.